So, how was day one of Tech Ed? Good? Awesome. Well, I appreciate you guys picking me as your last session. My name is Stephen Rose. I am a senior product manager with Microsoft. I work for the Windows Business Group up in Redmond. I'm also the senior community manager. I oversee and manage the IT Pro community. So I did a session very similar to this last year, and I got a ton of feedback, and it was in three buckets. It was, that was awesome, where have you been my whole life? Unfortunately, they were talking about the tool and not me. The second bucket was, damn, everybody told me it was really good, I'm sorry I missed it. And the third bucket was, this is cool, but I have questions. This is great, but how does this? And I staved all those emails in a single folder, and I went back when I was asked to redo the session because it was so popular because of XP-EOS. So I've updated it and added a lot of information and took a lot of the questions that a lot of you emailed me last year. Some of you I'm looking at more than others. And have worked it into the session because I realized that maybe there was a few gaps for beginners that were just starting with this. So let's kind of get a show of hands. How many of you have used MDT before? Raise your hand. Good. How many of you are still using Ghost or a disk imaging tool? Raise your hand. All right. At the end of the session, I'm going to ask you, how many of you still feel that you should be using disk or a disk imaging tool to do your deployments, and we'll see how many hands have changed and if we've migrated some folks over, which would be a good thing. And the clicker is not clicking. All right, so we'll use the mouse. So some of you may know me from some of the resources that I oversee and manage, the biggest, of course, being the Springboard series on TechNet, microsoft.com/springboard. Everything I'm showing you here today, no, not quite everything. Some of the Windows 8 stuff we're just starting to put out, but almost all this content is on Springboard. I have FAQs and walkthroughs and white papers that will take you through step by step. If you are not a subscriber of the Springboard Series Insider, I encourage you to sign up for the newsletter. You'll see a link for it on our site. I get guys like Johan Artemark, Michael Nystrom, Mark Rusinovich, really, really great technical speakers and IT pros like yourselves to write articles for it every month. By a show of hands, how many of you are Springboard Series Insiders? Nice. That's what I like to see. Excellent. If you're a Twitter fan, you're welcome to follow our MS Springboard feed or my own personal feed, Stephen L. Rose. For those of you that read Windows Team Blog, the Springboard Series is on Windows Team Blog. We do the Springboard Series tours. We sponsor MVPs, steps, so a lot of good stuff. So if you're looking for ways to get involved and looking for information, we try to be your first stop for that. So I thought I would start with three phrases that you will never hear. So phrase number one, a free Ferrari? No thanks, I'll stay with my Ford. And that is Mark Rusinovich's Ferrari. A raise? No thanks. Having you as my boss is reward enough. And number three, Windows XP is more secure, more mobile, and built for how people work today versus Windows 7. Now, that's a little extreme, but I have heard people that say, you know what? Windows XP is just fine. It works great for us. And it makes my head hurt. I'm like, seriously, it was not built for mobility. There's so many features. And this is the way that people work with XP, with a big old monitor and a bunch of post-it notes, one of which was always that user's password. Hey, I was an IT pro for 15 years before joining Microsoft. I've seen my share of passwords on the monitor. So it gets into, you know, before we talk about how to migrate, let's talk about why people don't migrate from Windows XP. Because a lot of you are consultants, and I've chatted with a lot of you, and you're like, you know what? I love MDT, I love what you're talking about, but my customers are not budging. So I thought it's good to understand why people don't move. Number one is dollars. They have a lot of old machines, they have a lot of old pieces of software. I love it when I would walk into a company and, you know, you're like, okay, so which version of QuickBooks are you running? And we're on QuickBooks 15, and they're like, we're on QuickBooks 4. Okay, you know, or you would say, so tell me about this application, and you would go and you would do an inventory of all their machines, and how many of you have run into this one, that they have this beautiful server room, but under some admin's desk somewhere, there was an old beige 486 with a turbo button on the front. And you're like, what's this? And you're like, don't touch that, that's our inventory server. It's the most important machine. And I'm like, then why is it here? And they're like, And you're like, well, can you upgrade the software? I'm like, no, the guy who wrote that's dead. He's been dead for like 5 years. And, you know, why don't you virtualize? But how many of you have dealt with that little box either in the corner of the server room or under somebody's desk, and it's a really important box, but everybody's afraid to look at it or touch it? Yeah, exactly. It's like incredible. So dollars feeds into that, and that is something. And it's hard to get to make justifications, but when you start to talk about security, how secure is your data? How secure is the way that they are working when they're working with, you know, domain versus non-domain joined devices? It will pay itself back, and it becomes critical. AppCompat is tough. It's hard to get people to do it. The most important thing about AppCompat is you've got to sit down and find out what people have on their network, because what you do is you got to break it down. Okay, these apps absolutely have to be upgraded. You're going to have to spend the money. There's newer versions. You paid for this. You bought it 11 years ago. It's paid for itself 10 times over. It's time to do it. There can be virtualization, but be aware. Virtualization is great when you have, you know, a group of people who say, you know what? We have one app, and it's our payroll app, and it's the one that doesn't work with Windows 7. Fine. Virtualize it. But virtualization is a temporary solution. It is not a permanent solution. And that's important to know. So we go, great, we'll do this to get over the hump, but then we either need to remediate the application, bring in a developer to fix it. We want to maybe move it to the cloud. It was amazing. I was in Brazil a few months ago, and I was meeting with one of the largest banks in Brazil, whose name I will not say, and their key backbone app is a 16-bit application. Why? It's fast. It doesn't crash. It always works. I'd need, you know, almost nothing to get it to run. And you're like, okay, that's great. But is it really meeting the needs of how you're doing business today? And is it agile? And it's important to start to have those conversations with your customers about that, because Windows XP is going away. Got April 2014. It's coming up April 8th. And they've got to start to make those moves. And you are seen as the trusted advisors. And my role here today is really to help give you the information as that trusted advisor to not make your customer feel like they're pushed off of this, but to really help them. And it's a great chance to step back and say, okay, if we're going to do this, how do we help you to really do business the way that it makes sense? Should we put your salespeople on tablets? Should we build an app in the cloud? How's a chance to own the data? I walk into so many companies and I'm like, where's all the user data? And it's like, and it's on the user machine. If you fire a salesperson, that person has your whole sales database on a local machine, rather than moving it to a cloud app or doing things in SharePoint or Office 365. So use this as an opportunity to step back and take a look at the business process and see how it makes sense. The third one is deployment. Now, what was interesting was about 2 years ago, Gartner came out with a study that said that the average IT pro, it took 6 hours to deploy a single workstation. And I went, that can't be right. So I started talking to various IT pros at various companies. And I said, well, how do you deploy Windows? And they said, well, we use Ghost. And I said, well, what's your process? Well, we have to back up all of that user's data, and they have between 40 to 80 gigs. I'm like, okay, there's an hour to an hour and a half. And they're like, okay, then we've got to take our image, and we've got to blast it out to that computer. That's another 30 to 40 minutes. And then we have to move all the user data back. And I went, seriously? Don't you migrate data in place? Well, we can't when we go from XP to Windows 7 because there's no upgrade. So we have to move all the data off, wipe out these machines, and do it. I'm like, okay. I'm like, well, how many images do you manage? And they said, well, we manage 32 images. I went, what? At an average of every time a service pack patch or any one of those things come out with 25, we did the math, and it came out to that person was spending 2 months every year managing their Acronis, their Ghost, whatever images. We're like, wow, it's a lot of time. So that's why I sat down with Michael Niehaus and Jeremy Chapman, a lot of great guys, and we built this session, because it really kind of digs into that and go through that. So the most confusing statement I've ever heard is, I would move to Windows 7 or Windows 8 if it were easier to deploy. So here's the challenge, and it's the same challenge that I do, and I do it live in front of audiences. I'm going to do it in front of you, and that is, get from Windows XP to Windows 7 SP1 or Windows 8. Get from IE6 to IE9 or IE10. Office 2003 to Office 2010. Migrate all the user data in place and do it in, let's not even say 60 minutes. I average about 30 minutes. And here's the best part. I'm going to do it off of a USB stick. So I'm going to do it on a non-networkable, contained, connected, whatever term you want to use, machine. Which means I could hand this to somebody getting on a plane, and I can do it. Or one of my favorite scenarios is I talk to people like, well, we have salespeople, and they don't want to send their laptops in because it's going to take 3 days to get their laptop, another day or so to image it, and 2 to 3 days to send back. I'm like, well, why don't you send it to them on a USB stick? Well, Ghost doesn't support that. Okay, well, then that's going to be a problem. So I have two quotes to remember, and then we'll jump into our demo. And Stephen Sanofsky did a great quote at Build, and he said, if it works in Windows 7, it works in Windows 8. And so far, with the CP and RP, just about everything I have tried, minus a few drivers, that has been absolutely the case. Certainly all the printers and things like that. So I will add a quote to that. And my quote is, if you know how to use MDT and deploy Windows 7, you know how to deploy Windows 8. There really is very little difference. There's some new added features. There's sideloading and bringing in apps. But the base of it is exactly the same. And that's what's great, is the skill sets and the time that you spend learning MDT will absolutely pay off for you in spades. So let's go to our machine, of which I have a cute little panda. You know why? Nobody doesn't like a panda. Are there any panda haters in the room? There you go. So I have this cute little panda, and I put a folder called Migrate Me, and I've thrown a little bit of data in it and some folders and things like that because I thought it'd be really nice at the end of our demo to actually see this. So I have a USB key. It's 16 gig. This is 16 gig. Bought it at Staples. So we'll pop it in the machine, and we'll let it start to run. And it's going to come up with a little autoplay, which is great. And it'll run me through a little wizard here in a minute. Now, what I'm doing, I could have run as a zero-touch installation. That means the user boots into this key, sees nothing, walks away, the whole machine is done. But for those of you that have seen this, it makes for a really crappy demo if I just put in a USB key, walk away, and say, it's done, because you go, what just happened? So I'm going to manually walk through some of these steps, but I'll show you when we get into the tool, and that's where the real magic happens, how that came about and how those screens that you're seeing, why those are popping up and how we can populate those. So I have a bunch of tasks that I have set up here. I have one to reset my demo environment, so every night I go back to my hotel and reset my machine back to Windows XP and cry myself to sleep. No, I'm just kidding. So I can pick, you know, Windows 7 64, x86, whatever I want. I'll just pick an x86. I can have Windows 8 task sequences, Windows Server. I can do XP, Vista, 7, 8, Server, any one of those from this. All right, I'm going to pick next, and I have a choice. I can refresh this computer, or I could upgrade it, but I can't upgrade it because you can't upgrade from Windows XP. That's why it's grayed out. If this was Vista, or if I was moving from 7 to 8, I would see that. Not going to see it here, and that's just fine. Because at the core of MDT is something called USMT, User State Migration Toolkit. Very simply, USMT says, all right, I'm going to take all the information that's important to you, everything in your user profile, your desktop, your files, your settings, everything. I'm going to move them over here. I'm going to wipe out the OS. I'm going to put in the new OS. Tell me everything you do. And at the right point, I'm going to move it back and put all that user's data back. So you end up right back where you left off. And that's great. Computer name, we'll leave it default. Don't want to join a domain. But again, I could automate this and actually have it go out to a database that says, ah, this is this machine. It's attached to Stephen Rose. Here's its domain information. I'm going to choose to automatically determine the best location, which is going to make sure that my data and settings, the stuff that's on my desktop, everything, gets moved over and automatically gets moved back. I can choose at this point also to save it off to a share somewhere. So I could say, you know what? Take that user's data, move it to a share. I'm just going to map a drive. Their C drive's not going to be local, and Bob Jones is no longer going to have any information on his machine. Or don't save it. I'm just doing a total refresh, wipe this whole machine. Okay? Choose where to save a complete computer backup. Users don't back up their machines. I remember I was a hired gun. I would go into companies and look at network security, look how they had things set up, and my favorite was I walked into a company with, they had about 8,000 salespeople. And I said, so how do your salespeople back up their data? Go, we gave them hard drives. I said, really? Did a survey. One salesperson was the only person to use the hard drive and back up their data. They got it. Most of them said, still sitting in the package you sent it to. Absolutely. It's what happens. Salespeople, not the most technically savvy people out there. So we know that. They're God's special children. It's okay. So in this case, we're not going to perform the backup, but we could send it off to a special location. We could do that, and that's just fine. We'll keep our time zone, our currency, our layout. We'll keep the time zone. I'm not going to install Office at this point, but I could. Top secret password of test. Great. I can choose at this point to enable BitLocker. Again, this would be a final step that we would move to the end and say at the end, BitLock it. If we're doing 8, it'll say just BitLock the data, BitLock the whole drive. Since we're Windows 7, we just have to choose that. We can also pick TPM, TPM with PIN, backup to direct Active Directory, however we want to sort of build that out, and that's just fine. And we say go. So I have 5 o'clock pretty much, 3 minutes after 5, and we'll see how long this takes. So we'll let this start to run. We'll come back like a cooking show. We'll check on it and see how it's doing. So we'll let that go. So what are the key tools? There's a lot of tools listed here, but I'll go through them one at a time. But it is kind of an alphabet soup when you look at it, because you've got MDT and MAP and ACT and AIK. You've got ZTI, LTI, HTI, and then you've got WDS or SCCM as your backbone. And it starts to become this jumble of terms. I meet people and they're like, I can't tell all these different products apart. What do they do? So I thought, not so easy. We'd actually kind of break it down and do a little hamaton. I love those pants. So MDT, at its core, is say goodbye to disk imaging. Forget having to back up all your data, move everything over. We are going to do this. And my favorite thing about MDT is the packages that you create in MDT can be imported into WDS, Windows Deployment Server, or SCCM. The packages you build in SCCM can be moved into MDT, for which I can build offline install media like this USB key. The great thing is, again, every tool I'm talking to you about up here, except for SCCM, is free. So MDT is free. If you go to your boss and say, I want to try deploying 10 machines, and I've got this cool tool, how much is it going to cost me? It will cost you nothing. Excellent. They're going to say, go ahead and go use it. And I'm going to dig into MDT in a few minutes. The next tool is the Microsoft Assessment and Planning Toolkit, or MAP. MAP will go out, and it will give you a listing over time of every machine on your network. It will give you the name. It will give you the specs. This is a 64-bit machine. This is 32. This one is 2 gig of RAM. This one is 4. It will go through, and it will give you all that information. That is critical. You cannot start a deployment until you know every application and every piece of hardware on your network. My favorite story from any of the tech eds when it came to this was a guy walked up to me and he said, I got Windows 7 to work on a 386 with 512 megabytes of RAM, and it worked great and the whole thing. And I'm like, okay, awesome. But is that really a good experience for your users? And I've had people say, well, you know, we have older machines. They're like some of the early, you know, Pentiums, and they got 2 gigs of RAM and they'll run Windows. Is that really a good experience? So by knowing what you have and saying these are machines that need to be refreshed, these are early Vista area machines, and although they'll run Windows 7 may not be the best experience, these are later era Vista or Windows 7 machines, these will run Windows 7 beautifully. 4 gig of RAM, decent amount of hard drive space, decent processor to provide a good experience, because your users moving off of XP are scared and not ready to go to 7. What is interesting, though, is because we've had so many consumers move to it that many IT pros have come to me and said, we started talking to people that had Windows 7 at home, and they loved it so much and found things frustrating to do on XP. For those of you on Windows 7 and work with XP customers, take home an XP machine for a day. You'll go crazy trying to do things like snap because it doesn't work, or getting to your settings, or going into Start to search for a program or a file and it doesn't work. And once a lot of these users, you can use that as a way to get momentum to help to replace those machines and move that up. ACT. ACT is a tool that is going to go out and it's going to tell you very simply what software will work with Windows 7 and which ones will not. It will also, in many cases, in some cases, it will give you what's called a shim. Now, in the real world, we know shims. You go to a coffee shop, the table wobbles, you grab some napkins, you throw it underneath. The table's fixed. Is the table fixed? No, we've shimmed the table. The table has lied to us. The table is still wobbly. It has not been fixed, but we as humans go, we have fixed the table. No, we haven't. We just shoved napkins underneath it. We shimmed it. And that's exactly what ACT does. In its simplest case, when ACT does a shim, it lies. Let's say the application was built for Windows Vista. We're going to run it on Windows 7. And when it runs on Windows 7, it physically goes to the app and it says, hi, are you built for Windows 7? And normally the app would say, no, I'm Vista, even though the app would work in 7. Well, what we want to do is we want the app to lie. So when the Windows 7 turns to the app and says, are you built for Windows 7? ACT jumps in and says, everything will work if it just says it's Windows 7. So it says, say you're Windows 7. It says, I'm Windows 7. It says, great, you work. And it does. Perfect example, I had a laptop. I had one of the netbooks I was giving to a friend of my daughter. She needed a little computer. So I said, I have this netbook sitting around with XP on it. And I went to go put on Windows 7. And one of the drivers, which allowed the functionality of what I like to call embiggening and ensmalling, where you pinch and zoom and the image gets bigger and smaller, I call it embiggening. It wouldn't work. It was built for XP. So I right-clicked it, and I went into the app compat mode. And all app compatibility mode says, you know, run it as XP Service Pack 3. It's basically putting in a shim. It's lying. It's saying it's XP. It's not 7. Great. It installed. It ran. She can embiggen and ensmall into her heart's content. Life is good. So ACT helps with that. The other thing that I absolutely love is there is something called the app compatibility list. The app compat list is awesome. It is a gigantic list of nothing but apps that are certified to run in Windows 7. Your first step should be to go to download that Excel spreadsheet and search for every application that company runs. Go, great, we got 60 out of 65. These five are left. I can shim one. That leaves me with four. We're going to buy a new version of this one, virtualize this one, and you know what? This one we're going to move to the cloud or go to Office 365 or one of those. When you start to break it down, you find out you really don't have this massive amount. If you sit in any of Chris Jackson's sessions, he does a great job of breaking it down where it ends up with about 1% of all the applications within the company once you get to the ones that are not being used one time a year by one person when you get into the apps that actually affect everyday productivity. So it's important. So ACT. And by the way, these are screenshots from the Springboard series. So what you are seeing, all this information, everything I'm showing you is what we have on our page. So I'm not just telling you what to go look at. I'm telling you where it's at and exactly what we have there. The AIK and Config Manager. How do I install and customize these images? And you know, I have a lot of machines to manage. We have some great documents that will dig in a little deeper on how to do offline migrations and understanding multilingual image. So the stuff we're teaching you today, go check this out afterwards, and it will give you those double clicks to a lot of questions that you guys have had. Now, LTI, HTI, and ZTI, light touch, high touch, and zero touch. The goal absolutely should be zero touch. Zero touch meaning the user hits F12, the user puts in the USB key, they hit start, they walk away, the machine is magically or automagically, whatever term you'd like to use, on Windows 7. That's the best way. There's obviously a lot more work on the back end to do, and we'll go through how to set up a lot of that. Light touch means the user has to input some bits of information. Good for smaller companies. They need to put in their username and password, domain, and a few other things, sort of kind of what you saw in the wizard. What I recommend not doing is the high touch. High touch is difficult. Now, how many of you get paid by the hour as contractors? Raise your hand. I got like two. You guys should continue to use high touch. Because you're going to put in a bunch of DVDs. You're going to go from machine to machine. You're going to roam. It's going to take you 6-7 hours. You're going to get paid a lot of money. You may not get a lot of jobs after that, but it's perfect for you. Stay away from high touch. Stay away from high touch. Learn light touch. Learn zero. If you are handling DVDs or ISOs or pointing towards a deployment folder, which you're going to run EXEs, stop. Go have a bunch of drinks and come back drunk because you will think smarter than you were before. You'll go, this doesn't make any sense. Why am I doing it? Seriously, don't go that path. Very bad. So you have your three, you have your four options. I actually read an article that said the best way to get to Windows 7 was to go to Windows 7, go to Windows Vista, and then upgrade from Windows Vista to Windows 7. This one makes no sense to me, so we'll pretend like it didn't exist. There is the manual install and installation from DVD. There's drive cloning, which we've talked about, and automated migration with applications and drivers. So what I'd like to find out is from those of you who are doing Ghost, how many images do you manage? So we'll do this with a show of hands. How many of you manage only one image with Ghost? No one. How about 2 to 5? Not bad. 6 to 10. Now things get fun. 11 to 20. Have anybody in 11 to 20? One in the back. How many? How many images are you managing? Yeah, you. 15, 16 images. That's a lot of images. All right. Good to know. So let's talk about MDT and the workbench. So I'm going to log in here. And it's not letting me. There we go. So let's, is it that one? It is that one. All right, so I just want to first of all show this is a Windows 8 machine that I'm running this on. So I'm running this off of Windows 8. So this is MDT. This is MDT 2012. There's some great new features in it, like support for POS systems and things along that line. So the first thing that happens when you get into MDT, and this is where I had a bunch of questions, is, well, it's telling me I need some components. ACT, MAP, all of these tools we're talking about are built in, and all you have to do is download them and install them. It'll tell you what you need. So it'll say, hey, you need the AIK, or you need the ACT, Application Compatibility Toolkit. It will then put it in available for download. You click download, you click it, you browse it, you install it, you're good to go. So it will take all of those tools, and it'll put them into one place. So your first step of what tools do I need to do this is solved. MDT 2012 has updated that to make it a lot easier to get the tools and find the tools that you need. So the next thing I've done is I've made a deployment share. So I'll show you my deployment share. My deployment share is here on my C drive. I've actually created a folder called MDT, and in it is my boot. It's all my boot stuff. And inside of deploy, here's all my applications, and I'll show you how those all go in. There's Office. Here's all my operating systems, and notice I put them in all nice, pretty folders through MDT. Windows 7, Windows 8, Windows Server, Windows XP. All of my out-of-box drivers are all here, so everything is here. So what you want to do is back up this MDT folder. You can also move this MDT folder to a share and have multiple people using this tool, and then what they do is when they launch the tool, they literally go, hey, I got a deployment share. Great. Open it. Where is it? You browse to it, you connect to it, it updates it for MDT 2012 if you're still using 2010, and multiple people can connect to it. So that was the question I got. Number two, can multiple people use one deployment share? The answer is yes, absolutely. All right, so we have set up where our deployment share is going to go. Now we're ready to fill it and build it. All right, nice. So we'll start with applications. Office. Office is a good one. So I'm ready to bring in Office. I click, and I have 3 or 4 different choices. I can do the applications with the source files. I can do applications without source files somewhere on the network, or an application bundle. I can literally click it, import it, and bring it in. Now, one of the features that was released with MDT 2012 that I really like, and I'm going to right-click the package and go to Properties, is when I go to Office Products here, I have this great edit config.xml. So if you are one of those people who go, we just use scripts, it's going to build the XML script for you. We can put in the product key and the customer name and the EULA and all that other good stuff. But there's something called the OCT, the Office Customization Tool. This is great. If you are going to do offline installs, what we refer to as an unmanaged install, a PC that never touches the domain, but you want to lock it down. So it's a member of the domain, but it never really checks in that often. You can create, obviously, local group policies that are set up through an MMC on the machine. You can do that here for Office. So I can go here into Office, and I can say, you know what, I want to modify some user settings here in Outlook. And I want to make it where on the Outlook Today page that it is available, so I'm going to enable it. And on the URL for that, I'm going to point them to our internal SharePoint site. So I'm going to say SharePoint. Helps if I can spell SHARE.steveco. So I'm going to point him towards our SharePoint site, and now the first time that user launches Outlook, they're going to end up right on our SharePoint. It's going to be right on the right telling them our, you know, what's going on today and what's important at the company and all the key stuff that they're doing. I have 4,800 settings in here that I can start to play with. Absolutely tons. What is the folder homepage for all the Outlook special folders? What are the search folders? What is the Outlook, you know, you can even say, you know, I hate those system warnings. I'm going to turn them off so that they don't start popping up, or show the Exchange Server messages. You know what? We're going to turn this off because when our help desk person, Dot, who's been with the company for 40 years, sees it, she's not going to know what to do, and she's going to call help desk not knowing it's going to rectify itself in a few seconds. So you know what? We're just going to turn that off. It just creates confusion. So you have great opportunities to go in here and to start to customize all of these key features. We can also pick what our dependencies are. Before you install Office, this must be installed. After Office, install this. Knowing that before and after becomes pretty critical. And we can move those up and change the order that those happen in. Operating systems. So if we take a look here at, let's say, Server 2012, I can say I'd like to import a new operating system. It will go in, I'll say, first of all, got a full set of source files, a Windows DVD or a CD or an ISO. I can point it towards an ISO and do this, absolutely. I can customize and grab a custom image folder like a WIM. I can even go through and grab a WDS image if I choose to do that. I can grab this any way that I like. Literally go in, it takes about 10 minutes. It'll grab it, it'll process it, and it'll build it into that specific application set. What I do recommend is that when you go to do a new operating system, build a new folder first. For example, we can call this Win8RP if I was going to do the RP. And I would say next, good. And it's going to be called that, and then it's finished. And then what I'm going to want to do is go in here and then do the import operating system and do it this way. It makes it much easier to build folders for your images. The one thing that I see when people send me screenshots of MDT saying, hey, I need some help, is it's a gigantic jumbled mess. Keep it easy on yourself. Build folders for your drivers, for everything you're doing. For example, here in my out-of-box drivers, you'll see here, I took all my Lenovo drivers. Now, here's where things get cool. For those of you who are managing multiple images, if you hand me a brand new laptop and say, here's a brand new Lenovo XT220, whatever, I need to get ready to deploy. It's going to take me a total of 5 minutes. I'm going to crack open the laptop the first time. I'm going to run through all those little messes. And I'm going to take my USB key. I'm going to pop it in. I'm going to transfer that whole drivers folder over to my USB key. All right, it's going to take about 5 minutes or so to copy. I'm then going to go here. I'm going to say, OK, out-of-box drivers, great. I want to create a new folder. I'm going to call this Lenovo XT220. Great. I hit next. Great, I built my folder. I finished. I go here into that new folder. There it is. It's going to load some default items that are going to be part of it. Great, wonderful. So now I'm in there, and I go. I choose import drivers. I go to that USB key, and I suck all those drivers out. It'll take about 5 to 8 minutes. Now, when you go to deploy to that machine, you have a custom folder with all of the images and all the drivers that are necessary. Here's the best part. If they update a driver, you get an email from Lenovo that there's a brand new Lenovo driver. Great. All you got to do is say, you know what? This Alps mouse one is now gone. So I choose delete. I get rid of it. Wonderful. Nice. Gone. I choose import driver. I just do a single driver and bring it in so I can constantly keep my drive store updated. This becomes important when we start to build our image. So we say, okay, we're going to do Windows 7. It's a Lenovo T20. Here it is. Now it's got everything it needs to build that WIM. So we're building this piece by piece. But it's dynamic. We're just dealing with operating systems, apps, and drivers. That's it. If the operating system and apps don't change from machine to machine, the only thing that is going to change is the drivers. And that's what's really great about this. I'll come back to packages. I'll go to packages. So packages, I have a little script here that's going to update IE8 to IE9. You could also use this to put in the latest signatures for antivirus, any one of those. It's very easy. Do a little script, grab this, replace it with this, bring it in. Task sequences. This is the heart of it. So I've created one or two task sequences here. I'm going to get rid of this one because I'm going to create a new one. So I'll delete that. Say next. Wonderful. Finish. And I'm going to create a new tag. Let's create a new folder. We'll call this Tech Ed US. So we'll create a new folder because, again, we're all about organizing our stuff. So I'll say finish. Great. Go into Tech Ed US. And I'm going to do a new task sequence. So I'm going to give this a new ID. I'm going to call this Dell XP220s. Okay? Great. Dell 220. If I had special comments, this is for sales machines. This is for general use. This is for laptops, desktops. You can put in whatever you want here. I'm going to say next. And it's going to ask me what type. And I got a bunch of different choices. So I can do a sysprep capture. I can do a standard client task sequence. I can do a client, standard client replace the task sequence. I can do a light touch OEM. If my OEM has given me a light touch task sequence, I can bring it in right here. A standard server task sequence. A post OS task sequence. I can even do a deploy to VHD. Take this machine, build out as an image, and deploy it as a VHD. I have lots of different opportunities. So I'm going to stick with the standard client task sequence. And I'm going to say next. And the first question it's going to say is, okay, what OS would you like to install? And because I've made all these very nice, pretty folders, it's easy to know which one. So I can say, you know what? I'd like to do Windows 8, and I would like to do a Windows 8 64-bit. Okay, nice. Next. I am not going to specify a key at this time. I'm going to put in my name and my organization and my home page. Great. And I'm not going to drop an admin password because I've had a lapse of reason for some moment. And I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to execute out this task sequence. I can view the script. This is the actual script that's going to tell it exactly what to do. And this script is going to change and edit as time goes on. I'll then say finish. So now I go into my Dell task sequence. I can first of all say which platform this runs on. I can say, you know what, this task sequence is only made for these types of machines and this type of task sequence. I can take a look at the operating system info, and I can edit my unattend.xml. For those of you looking to drop in some extra steps, go here, do that. I can do that. So I'm going to tell it to stop executing because it will take a while. Oh, it's got to stop. All right, we'll give it a minute. I didn't mean to hit that. So my next step that will happen is after it does this, it's going to go in, and I can go in, and I can start to do the task sequence. And the task sequence is where I can say, here's the driver folder. Here are the apps. Here is where I want you to bring in BitLocker. All of those steps that we saw when I was building out my properties, that's where that's going to be. And this is not going to let me stop. Oh, there we go. Good. So I'm going to go back to my task sequence. And remember we saw some of these choices like enable BitLocker? That was the screen you saw? Here it is. So let's go into some of these like install applications. All right, I'd like to install a single app. I can go into that, and you know what? I would like to install Office. And again, the more apps that I can package, Adobe, things like that can all be placed right there. So you know what? I'm going to make Office that app that I'm going to install right there. I click Apply, and now I've added applications to happen during this install. I can pick as many as I want. I can continue to add to that, and I can build that out. I can choose not only the gather only for where the install happens. Here's the state capture where it will grab that migration file. It will capture user state. It's going to capture the groups and network setting. Remember I said that when you deploy, when you migrate, it will migrate all the user state over that's inside that user folder. That's where that's going to happen. When I get to install, I can choose to install the OS. And I got this question a lot. How can I choose the letter for which I would like it to deploy to? Because I have two drives or I have separate partitions. How can I pick where this is going to go? So I can choose the next available format of partition, a specific disk. I can say do it to disk 1, partition 2, partition 1, whatever you want. You can pick those choices right here and have that stick. I can pick a logical drive letter stored in a variable or a specific logical drive letter for some reason. I want to do D because C is, you know, reserved for something else. I want to do D. I can set up D as the install one here. Or if it's coming in as some sort of second OS, if I choose to do that. I can go through a post-install. I can enable BitLocker. Again, I can turn that off. When the user state will get restored. Also at any point, so for example, I go back to install applications. Okay, I can go to options and I can do an add. I can add a task sequence variable that says, before installing Office, install .NET Framework 4.0. After installing Office, install Link. Because if you install Link before, you have problems with the Outlook integration and things not installing properly. I can put in an operating system version saying only do it with this version, not with others. Or install software, folder properties, or file properties, or registry settings. I can edit every step within this however I choose to do so at this point. So I've built the task sequence. I can go into any advanced configurations here, monitoring, but I'm pretty much good to go. So I go back here to my main folder, and my next thing is going to be to update the deployment share. Because I brought in new drivers, I brought in new apps. This is also another problem that people make is they don't update the deployment share. You've made a change locally, but you've not saved it to your USB disk, to your deployment share, etc. So make sure that you do that. I now go to my deployment share, and I go to properties, and it's going to bring up this window right here. And I go to Windows PE. So my next step is I am going to make a USB key bootable. I'm going to go into a command line, run a few commands, make it bootable. Great, my USB key is now bootable. I can build my generate light touch booto isable image. Great, that's what I want to call it. I go ahead and I apply that, and it's going to build an ISO image. And all I do is I go to WinZip or WinRAR, and I choose extract to, and I extract it to my USB key. Lo and behold, you have made a bootable, ready-to-install USB key that can be used completely offline. And here's what's really cool about it, is that, that's three. In less than 30 minutes, you can install a full version of Windows with all of the data that was on that user's desk. Notice, it's my cute little panda. Notice it's my Migrate Me folder, and I'm still waiting. By the way, don't stop it until you see that final screen that says install successful. Because if you quit out or reboot before that, the cache from MDT is not fully removed, and you can run into some problems. I'm going to do a few things here, but we're going to wait for that to pop up. So which version of Internet Explorer should we be seeing? We're not going to see IE8, but we will see IE9. So I'm going to launch IE, and look what it says, IE9. I skipped installing 8 because I ran a sequence. I said for it to go do 9. We're not installing Windows 7. We're installing Windows SP1. So I go here. I go to Properties. And sure enough, right here, Windows 7, Service Pack 1. The great thing is to do Windows 8, it's exactly the same thing. The only difference is going to be, oh, and this should be our good news. Yep, operating system successfully deployed. Zero errors, zero warnings. We finished in less than 30 minutes. Pretty cool. What do you think? You can clap. I think it's cool. And there's my cute little panda. So we've done it all. We've moved the whole thing over. When you can show your company how easy that is to do, and to be able to do it for free becomes critical. Now, some words of warning. I use this story a lot because the story's true and people always react to it. But that is, I work for a company in California called PacWest. They're a large shipping manufacturing company. I was doing a project for them for a few months, and I met a woman named Dot. Dot had been with the company for 29 years. I believe she actually was the babysitter for the CEO owner when he was like a small child. But when you would ask Dot a question like, why do you do it this way? Her answer was, because that's the way we've always done it. When Dot would have a problem, there was no getting on the phone with Dot. You had to go to Dot's desk. If Dot didn't see her cute little panda screensaver and her five icons and the one icon and the macro that she ran every morning to do her job, nothing happened until you went to Dot's desk and fixed it and made it happen. Right? We all know Dot. Yes? Everybody knows a Dot? Everybody knows a Dot. We all have one. Now, again, I love Dot, and she was great, but she would do things that didn't make sense. For example, when I found the key template that we used inside of the in the WinNT System 32 folder, and I said, why did you save this here? She said, because the computer told me to. I guarantee you the computer did not tell you to save this template inside the WinNT System 32 folder. So my word to the wise is when you do that deployment, because what you will be deploying is this. So we'll go here, we'll go into the user, we'll go into public. You're going to get documents, download music, pictures, recorded TV, videos, and you're going to get desktop favorites, all of this. This is what you are going to get. If it is not here, content, desktop, downloads, favorites, links, documents, music, pictures, videos, folders, save game searches, it will not get migrated, which means dot special template will not get migrated and it will get deleted because it's not inside the user folder. So before you use USMT, I would search that machine. I would go into Office and take a look at where have some of the previous documents been saved and where has that come out, because that's going to be pretty important to ensuring that you do not lose some of this data. So search the machine. Do searches for like commonly opened documents, programs, etc. Number two, only the applications that you have packaged will be on this machine. Not all applications can be packaged. There are some apps you cannot package as a WIM file. So those you will have to run a script, run them from an ISO, run them from an EXE. But in general, you will find that about 90% of applications can be packaged up as a WIM packaged file. So take the time, package up some apps, build it up. Bottom line is, as a completely free tool, you now have this great way to deploy. And once you build that WIM image, which has all the stuff in it, you can suck it over into either WDS and do Windows, turn your server into a Windows deployment server and deploy it out via an F12 boot, or you can bring it into System Center, add additional feature functionality and use that. It's one image. You're not reproducing this across multiple things. As we move to Windows 8, this is going to do the core pieces of Windows 8, and all that's going to be left is apps. So I get a lot of questions. How do I deploy Metro-style applications in Windows 8? So a few things to be aware of. Number one, if you want to do what we call sideloading. Sideloading means you've built a Metro-style app for your company. You want to run it on the Windows 8 slate. You can do it one of two or three ways. You can either A, put it a USB key and run a visual base, you can run a script, run a PowerShell script that installs it right there onto the machine. You can do it from a PowerShell script on a network share that will run. And that's two of the easiest ways. If you are not running Windows Enterprise, if you plan to run Windows Pro, or if you have Windows RT machines, Windows on ARM, you can build what's called a self-service portal, which you can do either with Windows Intune or System Center. If you choose to run Pro, if you choose to run Windows RT, you cannot sideload applications. You can run scripts, though, in MDT, in the next version that is coming out shortly, where you can actually say, this is the desktop-based configuration of apps that I want to see. They are public apps that are available. You can download and package them, push them out in PowerShell so that everybody at least has the same basic desktop, but your custom apps, if they're not public, you will need to go through that aspect, okay? Also, just as a reminder, WinRT will only run Metro-style apps. You cannot install applications. WinRT is pre-installed on machines, unlike Windows 7 Pro, Windows 7 Enterprise, or Windows 7 Consumer, which you can do. You will not be able to use MDT or SCCM with WinRT machines to deploy. The OS is already deployed on those machines. So some key things as you are starting to make plans saying, well, you know what, we're going to keep Windows 7, but you know, we're going to have Windows 8 for our sales team. As somebody says, well, you know, we're looking at these ARM devices, and they look pretty cool, and they're cheap, and they got great battery life. You got to go, okay, hang on a second. That's great, but we're building these really cool Metro-style apps. How are we going to deploy them out to the users? And if you're not using some of these devices, you're going to run into issues. If you are running Windows Slates that are enterprise, you'll be able to sideload, manage those, build those app directories, and do that. So as deployment gurus, which you all will be someday, that becomes a key point of it. So any questions on that? I have time for a few questions, and I'll go back to the presentation. Over here? Yes, of course. It's always the guy in the corner I can't see. The Windows updates, that's a good question. How do I do Windows updates? Well, Windows updates, you can use any one of the update servers for your machines that are already deployed. What you can do here is you can install them as packages for the machines that you've not employed yet. So if you've got a bunch of Windows updates, you can download those, put them into applications, and add a step in your task sequence that says, install all these hot fixes or patches, which you can do at the end. Again, this is for machines that are not deployed. Once they're deployed, you'll use, you know, you can use Windows Update Services or any one of the internal servers to do it. But at least by doing that, because the first thing that happens when you buy a new laptop and you go to install those updates, it takes an hour, you can do all the critical ones right then and there, and that will save you quite a few steps. It's a good question. Did that answer it? We're good? We're good. Okay. Any other questions? Yes, over there. Absolutely. The question was, can I exclude folders? I don't want to move people's music and things like that. Well, probably the first thing that's important is if they are company-owned machines and you're going to do that migration, it's probably important to tell people before you migrate, hi, we will not be migrating your personal crap. Maybe use different wording, but it's a good thing to let them know that. So I'd probably let them know that first, but yes, you can go in and you can inside the task sequence, it will list all the folders in the XML script, and you can basically say, just remove the ones that you don't want to use, and that will do it. But be careful, because, again, people save things in weird places, so be cautious when you do that. But also get with your HR team, and they can put out something that will make sure that the company is aware of that. Unless you own the company, then you can pretty much do whatever you want. Other questions? Yeah, all the way in the back. They will not migrate. You're wiping out all of XP, and that's what's important to remember. You are taking the XP machine and wiping it. You're then installing the new packages that you've packaged up and the new versions of Office and dropping that all in, and then you're moving back their favorites, application settings, and their personal data, but you're not moving any apps. There is no way to upgrade, so we're really kind of doing what we call a migration. So that's important. So any apps have to be packaged. If they can't be, you'll need to run scripts that will then go out to a centralized share and bring those in. But most of them should be able to package, which will make it a lot easier for you to start to do that. I'm glad that you asked that, because that definitely makes that clear. So good point. Yeah. The gentleman that sort of looks like Bill Gates a little bit. See, now everybody's turning around to take a look. Everybody take a moment, turn around, take a look. Okay, we're good. Can you migrate multiple users? You can do that through WDS. You can say, I'm going to use this image for all of sales. So if you've already built them into kind of a global group or a domain group, yeah, you can push all of that to it and you can do that. Absolutely. You can also have it pick the drivers if you want by BIOS requirements. You can actually say, these drivers, search and see what the machine is and use these. So yes, you can. It takes a few extra steps, but absolutely. It doesn't have to be a machine by machine. You can also, when you go to build your images, it will say, which of these groups are you in? I've had people do this, where it says, I'm in sales, and then it grabs the sales WIM, which knows it's one of three laptops, versus, you know, management or help desk, which are desktops, which maybe have additional features, things like that set up. Yep, you can pick that. You can... Oh, you mean two users on a single machine? No, you can only push out, okay, now I understand your question. Yeah, if you have multiple profiles, it will only migrate a single profile. It's not going to do both and bring them over. There's probably a way to script that, and that's a good question for Michael Niehaus. So if you want, you can email me, and I'll happy to follow up with him. There may be a way to script that, but my understanding is no, it's single user profile only on a machine. So if you have two shifts, yeah, you can run into some issues. Any other questions? I'll come back, and we'll grab some at the end. Yes, over there. Say that again? There's two or three different things that you can do. One thing you can do is if you are a Software Assurance Volume licensing customer, you can actually turn the whole XP machine into a VPC using XP mode. So the first thing you can do, but you have to be a Software Assurance Volume licensed customer to do that legally. So you could actually take the whole XP machine, apps and all, and virtualize it into that machine. Now, the object is to get people off of XP, so it's good for that. Hey, if this doesn't work on Monday, you're fired. So that's a good scenario. Yes, you can migrate everything into a Windows.old, and one of the great things is you can write an Action Center script with PowerShell, and I'm happy to send you some details on it, that can actually migrate everything out of the Windows.old back to the user profile. So you can do it that way as well. But that's long and takes a lot of time. And the problem is you're also backing up large portions of the operating system and using up a lot of disk space. By only migrating what's in the folders, that's good. If you do not have the time to go look at everybody's folder and make sure that they've saved stuff in the right place, that would be an option. But now you're going to be using quite a bit of disk space. So that would kind of be something I would watch for. Okay. All right, I'll come back to questions in a moment. So let's go back to our PowerPoint. All right. So we did it. We did our cool demo. How many knows? Who knows how many more days left until XP end of support? Anybody? Yes. Yep. You're a little over 18 months. So you're down to about 18 months. Yep. Absolutely. So some things to keep in mind when you're talking to your customers or you're talking to your own companies about Windows XP. They go, why are we changing? Because this is what was hip and popular when XP came out. They don't even make Oldsmobiles anymore. And, you know, I showed people, like, I showed my daughter's friends a Walkman, and they looked at me like, what the heck is that? And trying to explain to them that when the batteries would wear down, that the music would start to go like that, and they didn't get it. So this was what was hip and cool when that came out. These were the top tech products that year. Yeah, remember the Jornada? The big, gigantic Jornada? Absolutely. I love that thing. I had one of those. I love my HP Jornada pocket PC. But nothing said you were a geek than carrying around something that was this big. And you put your little stylus and be tapping away. The original Xbox, digital cameras with a whopping 2-megapixel camera that would store data on a 1 megabyte, 2 megabyte, or 8 megabyte disk. My phone takes better pictures than these cameras. That's how far we have come. Windows XP was absolutely named best product, you know, everybody loved it. It was absolutely revolutionary, and it was great. We had wireless connectivity. Ooh. Except you usually had to put in a PCM CIA card to be able to get that form of wireless. Remember those? Jam those puppies in, go in, walk around that little dongle hanging out. System restore, remote desktop, Windows firewall, enhanced user interface. This was what Windows XP offered. We don't work the same way. Windows XP was not built for mobility. It's not built for how people work today. Work-life blur is everywhere. Mobile, one of the things that I love about Windows 8 is that ability that my desktop and my apps, because I use the cloud, I use the Live ID, which allows me to synchronize my systems, that I have three different Windows 8 machines, and they are all exactly the same. Whatever docs I have on one, I have on the other two. What my desktops are that, because people don't work on one device anymore. They work on a tablet, they work on a desktop, they work on a phone, and some people even still work on a desktop machine, or often two laptops and a tablet, or a combination. We become a digital generation who is very tech savvy and very, very fast paced, and that flexibility becomes critical, and that's something that XP doesn't offer. I equate it to, if you take a look at a car built back in the 50s or 60s, it's beautiful and you've taken a lot of time to get it to work great, and that's great, and people become attached to it, but I don't trust it in an accident with a family of four, because it doesn't have those safety features, the firewalls, the malware, seat belts, airbags that we have today. And that becomes a pretty critical piece. It takes 18 to 24 months to migrate to an OS. You've got to go through app compat remediation and release planning. You have to go through user data managing and build core images and infrastructure and deployment and end user. It takes a while. And it is important if you have not started or you have customers that have not started that you absolutely sit down with them today and make them aware of what it's going to take to do. Now, one of the first things, by getting off of disk imaging, you are going to give yourself back 6 to 8 weeks worth of time, because you're going to be able to build these MDT images in a matter of hours and not days and be able to only manage certain driver folders. I had a few people said they weren't clear on what the end of support meant in April 2014. So I thought it'd be good. I actually found this slide. I thought it's good because it actually is confusing that right now we do offer fee-based non-security bug hot fixes and paid incidences, and you get security updates at no charge, and the bottom line is it's all going away, that the fee-based support is no more. That's it. It is no longer a supported OS. And I've actually had some customers said, we understand and we will continue to run it. And that's fine. And that's great. And people are allowed to do that. But it's important that you understand and your customers understand what that means. Now, earlier I talked about hard links migration. I just wanted to be clear that what we are moving, and it was going back to the gentleman in the back's question, is we are moving files that the user has created, the user accounts, so we can do more than one, but they can end up in the same place and we have to kind of pull them apart. And finally, application settings. We'll all get moved over. The apps themselves do not. So that's a critical thing to know and to be aware of. So MDT takes these and it manages them through these key tools. Our applications, our drivers, and our operating systems, and it puts them together. So planning for your deployment, questions? We have about 15 minutes left, and I want to make sure I left enough time for questions on this. So let me go back to the people with Ghost. How many of you people said you were Ghost people are thinking maybe it might be kind of cool to play with this and at least try this out and take a look at it? What do you think? Raise your hands. All right. Good. Questions? Yes. Good. Okay. How does this help? Well, yes. And this is free, and that's great. But where do you see this saving? What is the one key thing that Ghost did that this is going to maybe help you to do better? That's what I'm trying to understand. Is it just the overall process itself? And wow. Okay. Wow. Well, then definitely. Now, let me ask, for those of you that have used MDT, how many would say you have probably saved, and we can do this by hands, 20% of the amount of time that you spent using Ghost? Raise your hand. And we'll go higher. 30%. 40. 50. So about 30 to 40% time savings when moving from Ghost to one of these. Good. Excellent. Other questions? Yes, sir. Yes. Then you use Dart. We have the Diagnostic and Recovery Toolkit. It's part of the MDOT platform, which will allow you to go in and hopefully fix that issue and be able to bring that back. You may get one or two that may fail. It does happen from time to time, but it's rare. If you do your homework, it's pretty rare. How many of you have had more than 1% of all of your MDT deployments fail? Raise your hand. More than 1%. It will happen. It's usually user error or things like that. But if they do, or they hit the button too soon or something like that. Right. You can use Dart to go back and recover. It depends on what phase it's in, but up to certain points you can use Dart to recover that. After that, that data may be wiped out or gone depending on where that happens. So that is an issue. Can happen. Same with F12 deployments and things along that line. Any other questions? Yes, sir.
You didn't mention anything about the way you machine your image.
What you can do is you can do these in groups. What I usually done is I will build WIMS for sales, desktop, et cetera. And what I'll say is, you know what? On Monday, I'm going to deploy out to sales. So that Monday night, we deploy out to all the sales machines. We do it on a Friday. We check them Saturday. We check them Sunday. We make sure they're good. We send out USB keys to sales. Then we'll do it by departments or by OUs. I already have sales, desktop, hardware support, et cetera, grouped into OUs. We'll normally push this out by OUs. If you do System Center, then you can move it to System Center and do an on-demand. I'm going to F12 boot. They self-identify themselves. They hit it, and they get their package of images, and then you can continue to push the rest out. So there's a lot of different ways to do it. It really depends on based on your infrastructure. I'm trying to emphasize all the ones you can do that are with the free tools, but if you have System Center and some of those, you can do even more and create even more flexibility. And if you find that MDT is limiting, you might want to look at SCCM if you go, that's great, but I wish it did this or that, or I wish I could also manage phones and non-Windows devices and things like that, and that's where SCCM will bring some of those. Absolutely, yeah. There's several really good ones. I would go to Michael Niehaus's MDT lecture, and there's several SCCM on SCCM deployment management that will cover a lot of those little gaps that we didn't do today. Or you can ping me, and I'm happy to point you in the right direction with some of the content. Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Sure. Mm-hmm. Honestly, when it comes to development, and this is something I have a lot of friends who are developers, I tell them install on a VHD, or if you're going to do Windows 8, install to a Hyper-V image. If you're going to be doing deployment with all that stuff, I like the fact that you can take that image, back it up to a single hard drive, move it to another machine, and develop across multiple machines, or do it as some sort of virtual thing. I think it makes a lot more sense. I would say install Windows 8 on those machines and give them Hyper-V drives, or do Windows 7 and put them into virtual machines. gives you a lot more redundancy. I'm at a good place. I'm going to back up what I'm doing. There are multiple backup images because I know with developers, it's a pain in the butt installing all of those tools, and it takes a long time. You are probably better off with some of the higher powered machines working in a virtual environment. That'd be my recommendation and maybe another way to take a look at things. Chat with some of the other folks in the room, see what they think. Probably a good way to do it. Any other questions? Yes, sir. It's always the people that are in the dark corners. All the folks in the light aren't saying anything. So thank you for helping me out. Yep. I think he did a good one, that the user hit the power button when they weren't supposed to, or they pulled the power on it and the battery ran down. I mean, that can happen during deployment. It can happen during any deployment that you're doing. It's not data loss. We're talking about data loss due to a failed deployment. Data loss itself, the only way it would happen is if the user does not keep their data inside the user profile. And that's where you want to sweep the machine, do a look, and say, you know, is this user pretty savvy and they're putting things where they're supposed to, or did they put it in that WinNT System32 folder? Yes, the user state migration toolkit is exactly what migrates things inside of MDT. That's what migrates them off, brings that over. That was that. That was this. Hang on. Yes, you can. You can do that. But it is. It's the user accounts, the files, and the application settings. Absolutely correct. So you hit it on the head. Any other questions? If not, we're going to finish up 5 minutes early, and that's okay. You guys can all get ready to go drink and eat. Thank you very much. If you have any questions, I'm at the Windows booth tonight. Feel free to stop by. Thank you.